Hello and welcome to Left, Right and Center.
For another week, another wonderful, wonderful week of Left, Right and Center.
I'm Casey. Tim is the voice you just heard. Chris is the voice you're about to hear.
Oh, you are such a jerk.
So Tim, you're also Chris, because he said Chris is the voice you're about to hear, and then you spoke.
For all those listeners out there, if you're ever unsure about whose voice is whose, just be sure that the most annoying one is Chris's voice.
And the one that's being a bit of a jerk is Chris's voice.
I'd say I'm not necessarily the most annoying, but I am the most jerkish. I mean, I'll pay that.
No, you're both most jerkish.
The voice you can't hear tonight is the voice of Matteo. He's sick, ill, home.
Bedridden. I think he, turned into a pig or something. Is that what...
Haha, Tim.
No.
You made a swine flu joke.
Yeah, I should be.
Zing!
I hope I can check you out at the Rhino Room later this week.
I don't know what that is.
It's a comedy venue.
Well, it's not just comedy, but they do comedy, Tim.
This is the show where we do political news talk stuff.
News natter.
And just highlight cultural issues. We've had people are always coming up to me on the street saying how great our show is.
Oh yeah.
I've had an endorsement of the show on the Facebook group. Michael, one of the only people who seems to listen to our show as it would seem by the response on our Facebook group, has said, I was trying to work out a derivation in a statistics course and found the proof on Wolfram Alpha. If it wasn't for Left, Right and Centre, I wouldn't have got that extra 0.25% for my course.
I love Wolfram Alpha.
There we go. Left, Right and Centre, increasing your marks at university.
What are we talking about tonight, guys?
We're going to have a chat about the taser, which is,
the most deadly weapon ever invented, apparently.
Not quite, no. But
feels like it.
We've got. It's going to be quite an interesting.
You know
discussion.
What, Casey? I think you're exaggerating. And I could smack you for saying that. I really could.
Oh, Chris.
Well, we can. I don't know if I should be. I think we should take a vote on whether that's an appropriate form of discipline at this point.
My pathetic co-hosts aside, there's called a referendum. I'm pretty sure it's a plebiscite in New Zealand at the moment. It's just started last week regarding corporal punishment in the home. So.
And we'll be talking about that too. Sorry, Tim, I cut you off because I thought you were about to start running into the actual story.
Oh, I wouldn't dare.
Okay, well, that's good.
And we'll be talking about all sorts of crazy news like 7-year-olds whacking church by inventive means.
Yeah, but I think also something we've wanted to do is actually put a bit more interactivity into the show. That's something we've been lacking lately. And so what we thought we'd do is actually come up with a name for a segment, and you could email in or write in or call in with your idea.
This is Chris's bright idea for the week.
Okay. Not ours.
So the segment is called Stand By Your Yam, okay?
It's a yam like the vegetable, I imagine.
I imagine so, yes.
To let the people out there into the planning processes of Left, Right and Centre, essentially earlier in the day, Chris heard this phrase or...
No, I made it up.
Or made up this phrase and thought...
I saw a man divining a yam. He was pointing a metal object at a yam and trying to figure out how much water was in it, and I thought, it's good that he's standing by his yam.
And so now Chris
but
likes
he does
the
not
name.
Like green eggs and ham.
Yeah. Or wham. Wham is a, what, 80s? 80s
so
kid?
If you've got,
pop band with George Michael?
If I might finish explaining what's going on so that the poor old listeners out there will be able to find out. Chris has found this name,
Made it up, conceived it, but
he wants to do a segment with this name, but of course he's not inspired enough to actually think of one. So he's enlisting you, our faithful listeners, to come up with an idea, and I urge you not to humour him.
Oh, yeah, man, yeah, I would too. But if you want to humour him, boost his little frail pathetic ego. Give us a call on 8303 5000, or hit us up on Facebook. The group is Left, Right, and Centre. Now for a spanking good time.
This should be a
Casey. I love you. Can I just say I love you?
I'm just being outnumbered with puns here. That's the anyway.
And more of this week in Tim's sighing later on in the show.
Okay. In February...
Tim, can I just stop you? Have you ever thought of releasing an album of sighs?
In February 2007, there was a response to public opinion. There was a bill in the New Zealand Parliament to amend the Crimes Act to make smacking a criminal offence. Now, this has slowly gathered momentum and a citizens-initiated referendum, which I assume you can do under the New Zealand Constitution. I don't know it particularly well.
Really? One of the only ones you don't know, I imagine?
One of the few. I mean, I've spent much time reading the Iranian constitutions, but the New Zealand one has escaped me. Essentially, a citizens-initiated referendum was set up on this issue, primarily with the support of the former Prime Minister, Helen Clark.
Yep.
To deal with the question of corporal punishment and you know, specifically smacking.
Yeah, and I think the official question, Tim, that it puts is, should a smack as part of good parental correction be a criminal offence in New Zealand?
Yep. Okay, and this obviously opens up into quite a broad issue of whether or not we think, you know, smacking children is appropriate in the home.
Let's start with the referendum itself.
Yeah.
Should a smack as part of good parental correction be a criminal offence in New Zealand? For one, that would imply that if you vote yes to that, it would imply that a smack being good parental correction is also a criminal offence. So it would imply that good parental correction is a criminal offence.
So it's first of all implying a smack as not part of good parental correction.
Shouldn't be.
It's not even dealing with that issue.
That's like,
if you're smacking somebody but you're doing it as bad parenting.
Or in fact, if you're not their parent.
Yeah, or if you're not their parent.
Anyone
or,
can smack anyone else as long as you're not a parent, but you can be correcting them.
Yeah,
as long as you're not a good parent.
I mean, there's a great little quote here from the current Prime Minister, John Keyes, I believe.
Yeah.
He says that this question could have been written by Dr. Zeus. This isn't green eggs and ham. This is yes means no and no means yes. But we're all meant to understand what the referendum means. I think it's ridiculous myself. It's being run as a postal ballot because the former Prime Minister Helen Clark was so convinced that there would be such a poor voter turnout that they decided to do it over postal ballot, essentially over a month.
And not only that, it's over a month. So yeah. If yes means no and no means yes, a vote for yes is a vote for no.
Yeah.
So
the question is, and to top it all off, I mean, the current government have effectively washed their hands of it. The Prime Minister has said, "I'm not voting in this referendum."
Which I think is a great endorsement of the country's constitutional. Yeah.
This is what happens when you get citizen initiated referenda.
Exactly.
Where they
well, who picked the question?
I think there was a citizens referendum.
They had a referendum.
They had a petition. On a question, and then the referendum, the question itself, is posed by the chief electoral officer, I believe. Or hold on, I'll just look at the information I have in front of me. It's one of the parliamentary positions actually gets to word the question, but whatever, somebody along the line is completely...
Yeah, I think whoever it is, basically
no
fire
editorial
them.
Oversight. Yeah,
fire
absolutely.
Them. Alleged...
To top it all off, this is a... I'm not an expert, a legal expert. I don't know what the difference between a referendum and a plebiscite is exactly.
Well, a referendum is typically taken, at least in Australia, to mean a constitutional change.
Yeah, whereas a plebiscite is simply an opinion poll. Yeah, an opinion poll, essentially. And this is effectively what this is, because the decision isn't binding. So, I mean, if you're out there and you know what you could tell us about the difference, feel free to give us a ring.
I think basically...
8303-5000.
I suppose the idea of the people putting this would be that if there's a strong vote for yes, make it a criminal offence, then it can be followed up, or then it will give the government a reason to follow it up.
But the question is so poorly worded as to not be a very good measure
I think you could argue that it's a loaded question in that sense, because there's going to be confusion, and because basically people disagree about whether the phrase "should a smack as part of good parental correction" assumes that it's good parental correction. The fact that there's actually disagreement about that means that there are people who may believe the same side of the case, but voting yes and no, respectively.
Well, I mean, you've got child welfare organisations, Barnardo's, Save the Children, UNICEF. They're all saying, they're all encouraging people to vote yes. Which on first glance would make you look like...
No, it says, the question is, I'll read it out again, should a smack as part of good parental correction be a criminal offence in New Zealand?
And there's no way to say no to that, really.
Yeah, like...
If it's good, you can't make it a criminal offence.
Well, problem with the question is it has presumed in its wording that it is possible to have a smack as part of good parental correction.
And I guess that brings us to the question of...
Exactly.
Is a smack good parental correction, or can it be? What do we think, guys?
Retired referendum questions aside, can a smack be a part of good parental correction? Is anybody? I'll go out there. I don't think so. I would say, like, typically, and this is from discussions I've had with my parents, who have extensive experience with raising children. I think it's something that's typical of inexperienced parenting, and of parents who don't really understand how to, you know, discipline and make their children behave. And I think it's something that's indicative of inexperienced parenting, in my perspective.
I'll add that we are not at all experienced members of society that can really make a judgment on this. But
none of us
are even near parents.
Mm.
But yeah, I do agree. It seems like what a smack would achieve can also be achieved by much less violent means and much more effective means.
Can I say, I think you're both completely wrong. I think I'm actually a bit, not offended, but appalled by your points of view. Because as you know, in this world we live in, it is survival of the fittest. You know, might makes right and all that. And I think if we consider the case of ancient Sparta, we can see that smacking doesn't really go far enough. Shortly after birth in Sparta, the mother of a child bathed it in wine to see whether the child was strong. If the child survived, it was brought before the, the council of elders by the child's father. They then decided whether it was to be reared or not. If they considered it puny and deformed, the baby was thrown...
quote-unquote,
was thrown into a chasm on Mount Taygetos, or alternatively, sometimes they were left on a hillside to sort of starve to death. And it was this place was known euphemistically as deposits. So my point is, if the child is puny and deformed, it should be got rid of.
Hey, what happened to the Spartan Empire?
Yeah, I was going
to
say, who was more successful in the end, the Greek Empire or the Spartan Empire?
The Greek Empire. You mean Athens, probably.
Yes, mean...
Well, actually... It's interesting that you come to that. Athens also practiced, they also left some of their children out, or at least some historians argue that they also left their children out on hillsides to die sometimes, if they were particularly...
But then they were raised by wolves.
Yeah, well, both of them got rolled by the... Well,
that's actually Rome, Casey, but...
They're all the same.
And, yeah. And look, here again, I mean, it continues. Sparta, right, you know, they reared strong children.
Did Sparta ever have a referendum, though? So, like,
Sparta didn't need a referendum, and that's the point. My problem
with this idea...
We don't
know what the people of Sparta thought, though.
You guys
this could
are
be
saying,
just the ruling classes.
Well, it's interesting that you come to that. I think 80% of the population of Sparta were basically slaves.
Why are we talking about Sparta?
No, look, I'm trying to reinforce a point. Smacking is fine.
It's nothing compared to what people have done in the past.
It's nothing, and I think actually it's quite mild. I think we could do things, like we could decide if children are puny and deformed.
Infanticide, so it's okay with Chris.
Yes.
On that note, should we go to a song?
There goes your career in public office there, Chris.
Often on the show we have contributors come in, give us a ditty, tell us some stories, make us laugh.
Spin a yarn
or
and
two.
And all that jazz.
Knit us a quilt.
That's not
knit
a
us
euphemism.
A jumper.
That's not a euphemism for stories.
I had one of them knit me a quilt once, Casey, so I'm with you.
Excellent. Normally they come in and pre-record it before the show starts. This time, we've decided to do something different. We've brought him in live.
Yeah, and this is really big. And I can't stress just how major a thing this is for him. As far as I'm aware, he's never appeared on live radio.
It's a very big step.
It is. And I don't think... I mean, Casey, I'm sure he hasn't been on live television. And you were saying before...
Never been on print media. Live in print media. Never been live in a periodical. Never been published in a peer-reviewed journal, I don't think, either.
Perhaps not even in, a school newsletter. Anyway, this is a huge moment in his life, and we'd like to give it up to...
our mystery contributor.
Welcome to the show.
Thanks.
when
I had
you're ready.
A thought... I'm ready.
Don't rush him.
I had a thought occur to me the other day, and it surprised me that people haven't taken advantage of it earlier. A lot of people are overweight, and wherever you look... Drop my pen. Wherever you look on television...
It's all right.
Should I take it from the top?
Take it from the top.
Maybe you should have a drink of water if you want.
You can cut this, right?
No, we're live on air.
I had a thought occur to me the other day, and it surprised me that people haven't taken advantage of it earlier. A lot of people are overweight. They're in... Fuck.
Okay. Let's go to a break. We'll come back a little bit later in the show. Than when we're fully ready to do this, okay?
Student radio at O-Week on Radio Adelaide 101.5 FM. As studious as you are.
Are you ready for this, guys?
We're ready.
A woman who says she cannot find a job is suing the college where she obtained her bachelor's degree, the New York Post reports. 27-year-old Trina Thompson last week filed a lawsuit against Monroe College in the Bronx Supreme Court. She's seeking to recover $70,000 she spent to get her information technology degree. Monroe College spokesman Gary Axelbank says the case was completely without merit and did not deserve further consideration. Thompson wrote in her lawsuit that the college had not tried hard enough to help her find work. Guys, am I alone in thinking there's a lot this woman didn't learn at college?
Oh, well, I think that would be a good world where you could sue your educator if you didn't get employment.
Tim, basically,
you can
still
a doctor if they kill you.
Can I just say, Tim, this world exists.
I don't think you can.
Tim, this world exists, and it's called America.
You can definitely sue.
You can sue anyone. And look, I actually think this would be fair. You know those ads where they advertise IT places and they say, get a job within 6 months, you know, like they guarantee a job.
I'm pretty sure there's a little conditions apply thing.
Sue them if they didn't get you a job in 6 months, because it says on the ad.
Yeah, but the job they get you could be any job.
You know what we should get? We should get like a tame law student to consult on questions like this.
That's a good idea. If you're a tame law student...
Well, a law student...
If you're a tame law student, we can sit you in a cage and just when we need a law question, zing, or press a button or a buzzer.
Why do you say zing so much?
It's only twice. Anyway, if you're one of them... Call in 8303-5000.
And every time you answer a question, we'll give you a biscuit.
No.
Not a biscuit. We have to give them like a...
Casey might give you a biscuit.
What's something to do with law that you can give people?
A law book? A gown. A cap and gown.
No, but those textbooks are expensive, and so are the gowns.
A historian has claimed that haggis, the famous Scottish offal dish of boiled sheep intestines, was invented by the English before being stolen by Scottish nationalists and claimed as their own. Catherine Brown claims to have discovered a reference to the dish in a recipe book from 1616, entitled The English Huswife, some 171 years before Scottish bard Robert Burns made the dish famous with his poem Addressed to the Haggis. Meanwhile, a Glasgow chef has claimed to invent a chicken tikka masala, a popular curry dish normally attributed to the Indians, and is now pressing the EU to give the dish protected designation of origin status, alongside champagne and Greek feta. The Ali family, who own the Shish Mahal restaurant in Glasgow, said they came up with the curry in the 1970s to appease the Scottish, before it became the most popular dish in British restaurants. Guys, with all these culinary disputes going on, are Australia's numerous contributions to the world of food under threat?
I think this is probably the only time when the fact that our culinary contributions to the world are completely and terribly crap. This is the only time that's a good thing. Well, no one is going to try and steal it.
No one's stealing shrimps on a barbecue.
We've got the pavlova. I mean, we do have to fight tooth and nail with the Kiwis over that one, but I think that's quite a significant...
Well, the thing is, we clearly didn't invent the pavlova.
Well...
What kind of fruit does it have in it, Tim?
Christopher...
No, Tim, answer my question. What kind of fruit?
Well, the Chinese gooseberry, actually.
No, Tim, kind of fruit?
I'm telling you, it's the Chinese gooseberry. I mean, just because it happens to grow better in New Zealand and they decided to call it the kiwi fruit doesn't make it a New Zealand fruit. You do know that, actually. It's a Chinese fruit.
Zing.
Yeah, well, hey, shut up.
Police in central New Jersey say they arrested a man on burglary charges after he returned to the victim's house to apologise, the Times of India reports. The officers arrested 35-year-old Craig Fletcher last Wednesday after the homeowner informed them that a man had just rung the doorbell and apologised before running off. The homeowner had interrupted the burglary, chasing Fletcher, who had stuffed three laptops and an Xbox into his backpack and forcing him to leave the items behind. Fletcher was also charged with a second burglary in the same neighbourhood. Police do not know if he has a lawyer. Guys, I guess this shows that empathic burglars don't make good burglars, right?
Yeah. I mean, if you're going to be guilty and just turn up and say, sorry,
guys,
my bad. I mean, was it? Did he turn up with the stuff he'd stolen?
I know he left them behind because he was caught in the act.
Right. Well, because, you know...
So it was an unsuccessful burglary that he then apologised for.
I don't know. Well,
How did he think he could get three laptops in a backpack
and an Xbox?
Well, look, if he can pull it off, then fine.
He couldn't pull it off.
Yeah. Well, okay. But so there are what, three or four levels on which this is a stupid criminal?
Stop saying that.
What?
A 7-year-old boy was reportedly so desperate not to not attend church.
Can I just interrupt briefly? You heard the end of another. No. I was just going to say you heard the end.
Listen. I was unhappy with how that ended, but I heard the law and order.
A 7-year-old boy was reportedly so desperate to not attend church that he stole a car and led police on a chase instead. Police in Utah were alerted to a child driving recklessly on the morning of Sunday, July 26, eventually catching the boy up to about 72 kilometres north of Salt Lake City. At one point, the boy drove around a high school parking lot before taking off again, not stopping until he'd pulled into his home's driveway and run inside to hide. The boy's age precluded the possibility of criminal charges, but police told the father to take better care of his car keys. Tim, have you ever considered stealing a car rather than attending mass?
No, I haven't. How old was this kid?
Seven.
Seven. And he drove a car what?
Up to 72 kilometres away?
That's...
No, it doesn't quite say.
Yeah, oh well. That's pretty impressive. That's a clever kid.
He was able to negotiate a parking lot, so...
I can't even do that.
Neither can I.
I can.
Russian soccer fans travelling to Wales for their team's World Cup qualifying game have been advised to drink whiskey to ward off the H1N1 swine flu virus, the head of the country's supporter association has confirmed. Alexander Shpurgin told Reuters that we urge our fans to drink a lot of Welsh whiskey and as a form of disinfection. That should cure all symptoms of the disease. Russian fans don't fear anything or anybody, so this virus will not stand in our way of supporting the team. The Russian Football Association has also said that the health risks, enough to warrant the Russian Health Ministry to issue a warning against travel to Britain, should not prevent fans from travelling. Guys, surely the properties of vodka would be a more effective disinfectant than whiskey?
I think it's just that vodka would be less available in Wales. Surely that would be it. I mean, but
the economics behind the crisis.
Yeah, okay, well, look, firstly, I mean, let's not forget the fact that drinking alcoholic beverages, I'm not sure, is good for your immune system.
I'm going to tell you, I think it's very good. Well, I would advise it as a solution for all ailments. Once again, another sort of contribution to Tim Sy album.
Friggin' Christopher. Nothing serious to say. I'm sorry, I'm breaking the rules, but he has nothing to serious to say. Stop it.
Russian Prime Minister Vladimir Putin, friend of the show, has dived to the bottom of the world's deepest lake in Siberia aboard a mini-submarine. He descended 1,400 metres in a 4.5-hour mission to inspect crystals containing natural gas. The mission is likely to contribute to the 56-year-old's carefully cultivated image as a man of action. However, emerging from the dive, Mr. Putin played down reports that his next challenge would see him travel to space, saying that there is enough work on Earth. As well as being a black belt in judo, former President Putin has also taken to the skies in a fighter jet, been pictured astride a Mongolian horse and fishing without a shirt, and apparently shot a Siberian tiger with a tranquilizer gun to save a group of reporters. So, guys, Putin, awesome leader or the awesomest leader?
I think the awesomest leader. I mean, Berlusconi might be able to take him, but I don't know.
I think he's too busy in bed.
Yeah. No.
If Putin, he didn't catch
My favourite Putin story is still the one with the tiger, though, where they set up the photo opportunity where he took down a Siberian tiger.
Tim, you know that was a setup, right?
I know, but it's amazing. It's an amazing setup. I mean, everything he does is a setup.
The thing about that is they somehow think people will believe that, you know, a Siberian tiger was attacking some journalists, and all of a sudden he had a tranquilizer gun, two-hand.
Bullshit. It's amazing. But look, he's actually been to the bottom of the deepest lake in Siberia. He's flown a fighter jet. He's, you know, spent some time without a shirt on. I mean, who among us can say we've done that?
I think...
A businessman who smoked 30 cigarettes a day for decades has taken a novel approach to quitting by marooning himself on a remote Scottish island in order to kick the habit. Former merchant banker Jeff Spice was due to land over the weekend on the small island of Scarab High, which has no water or electricity supply, where he'll spend 4 weeks in solitude with only books and the island's sheep as company. The island's owner, David Hill, wished Spice the best with his island quote-unquote adventure and said, "If you're passing the island in August, then sound your klaxon and give Jeff a wave, but keep your distance. It can be a serious effort giving up smoking." Anyone wishing to help Jeff stop his addiction can deliver any single malt whiskey they wish to the following address. The Cove, Scarab High, the sound of Harris, the Western Isles. Guys, is this what happens when you don't have a quit line in your country? Ludicrous emigration?
That's amazing. Do you reckon they should just set up an island, not just where one person goes to quit, but just set up an island that is quarantined from cigarettes?
And then we install video cameras all around it and have a voice that tells them what to do.
I don't know what you're referencing.
I also think... I found the address confusing. I don't know that the whiskey's going to reach there, because I thought it was four separate places.
And also,
couldn't he just set up like a forwarding address that goes there automatically?
Like one...
I think you're confusing the postal service with email.
No, you can get a central box that is then forwarded to other places. You can do that. You can, like, say you wanted to forward to your home address, but you didn't want other people knowing that address. You could set up a box in the city, and it would get forwarded out to the suburbs.
Well, there you go.
You're so old, Chris.
Left, front, and centre, educating the masses.
Zing.
No, stop.
A man has had his penis glued to his stomach by the three women he was romantically involved with. The trio of women were alerted by an unlikely source, the man's wife. Police allege that one of the women lured the man, whose identity has been withheld, to a Wisconsin hotel room with the promise of a massage, and convinced him to be tied up and blindfolded. She's then alleged to have cut off his underwear and texted the other two women to join her in applying strong glue to several parts of his body. The women finally released the man after he began screaming, after which they allegedly stole his wallet, mobile phone, and car. Guys, I guess it's pretty clear what the lesson is here, right?
Is it something along the lines of, if you're going to have an affair with three women, make sure they're not psychos?
I think it's along the lines of we need stronger super glue sales laws. Stricter.
Okay, how about you don't have an affair with three women?
No, can I just ask, did he have a wife and then there were three other women?
I think it was his wife and two other women.
His wife and two other women.
Okay, because I wasn't sure if the wife was a participant or just the source.
Don't be doing that. Don't be having an affair with two other women and you're married to another one. I think it should be the lesson here. I mean, was it hell hath no fury?
Oh, I think the lesson is just carry some nail polish remover on you at all times.
Good one.
Because that dissolves the super glue.
That's a good point.
Does it?
Yeah.
That's
how you dissolve.
No, you make better super glue then. Seriously.
Then you make better nail polish remover.
No.
It's an arms race.
Just what we need.
Subscribe to Radio
Can
Adelaide.
I just say, I'm yes? Just as a... No, in my defence... When the law came down on me pretty hard, and I actually think it was out of order, I wasn't trying to make a point about the previous story. I was just trying to say that, again, you heard the end of another one of Tim's sighs. That's all I was trying to say.
Every time you fight the law, Chris, the law will win.
I don't think that's true.
Is that what we're calling the sound effect now? The law?
Well, no, we're calling me the law.
No, that is retarded. Hang on.
Tim, Casey clearly is the law. It's like in game show.
He becomes a crazy despot when he's given power. Like, anyone who's not experienced this, listen to the last two podcasts, and you'll hear his tyrannical control.
I'm a stickler for the rules.
Tasers. We're going to have a talk about tasers now. We've brought this up because last week, Taser International, which is the firm that released the weapon that everybody thinks of when they think of the word taser. It's one of those things where the name of the company has become talking like, you know,
Xerox.
Learjet, Biro, Xerox, that kind of thing.
Yeah, anyway, they've released a new model of the Taser.
The Taser X3, which is essentially...
Almost sounds like a shaver brand.
It's just you know, amazing. But it's essentially a semi-automatic model of the traditional Taser. You know, the traditional Taser has two options. It fires... essentially two darts that are connected to by a wire to a stun pack. They've got a range
it's in the taser.
In the actual gun. They've got a range of about 10 metres. The darts penetrate into the body. They're barbed, so you can't remove them without, you know, tearing large chunks of flesh out. And then deliver an electric shock
and
that serves to...
As I understand it, the combination of the shock, like the pain and some sort of like a immobiliser, muscular...
The electrical pulses mess around with nerve... signals and cause involuntary muscle spasms. Those two things serve to incapacitate, or you can use what's called the drive stun mode, which is where the actual cartridge that shoots the darts is removed and you get, on the edge of it, an electrical arc, and that is applied directly to the skin. And as far as I can understand, the primary method of using that, you know, primary result of using that is just the infliction of large amounts of pain, and that is what's used to incapacitate the victim. Anyway, Taser this week have released the X3, which has the capacity to fire off three...
it's like they've gone, what feature of guns don't we have yet? Semi-automaticness.
Semi-automaticness. I don't think that's a thing. But
semi-automacity.
Yeah, and so we thought we'd talk about Tasers, and it's been quite interesting. In researching this story, I was directed to the Taser's official website for the Taser X3, and
good fun watching that earlier tonight.
Like, I got to say, before I started researching this story, I was, you know, I think I would have described myself as solidly
pro Taser,
in the pro Taser camp. Yeah. And it was quite an eye-opening experience to watch this website, and it was amazing.
The homepage of their website is effectively it's a flash kind of video showing off the features of the Taser X3.
Yeah, and it's got
modeling it like it's
something
like
from a video game.
Yeah, like a Halo experience.
That's exactly what
doing,
I was thinking.
Zooming around and locking and selecting weapons, selecting ammunition.
Yeah,
showing human cutouts with laser guided shots
and bolts directly piercing at the heart. Into them. The background music is sort of this, you know, exactly what you're thinking, like the menu selection of a first person shooter. It's really amazingly.
There was a video, a bit sinister. There was a video on the website of a keynote address of the CEO of the company introducing the Taser X3. Which had some music as the guy walked on, which Bryce from Break It Down reliably informed us was from the soundtrack to the Matrix movies.
Yeah, and I, you know, I was just really put off by the way that it was so clearly targeted at sort of, you know, the you know, first-person shooter video game audience that this is some cool weapon that you can use in real life that doesn't have all the negatives of firearms. That would just, you know, and I'm afraid I don't have the URL in front of me, but I'm sure.
I think it was taserx3.com, but we'll put a link in the blog.
Yeah, we'll check it out.
I think the other thing, anyway, is we should probably discuss some of the stuff about the taser in general, and some of the problems that it has had, Tim, like some of the problems that have been caused.
I'll confirm it is taserx3.com. Go and have a look at it as ASAP.
Just watch out because it's quite extensive. Watch your download limit.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Yeah. And back to what I was saying. Basically, you know, there have been some studies about it and concerns expressed. So Amnesty International found, for instance, that between 2001 and 2008, 334 people had died in the United States after tasers had been used, and that in at least 50 of those cases, tasers contributed to or caused death.
Mm. And there's actually another report they did that said, which was backed up by the Justice Department in the US, put the number at about 180 in between 2006 and 2001.
Can I just clarify? It wasn't Amnesty International; it was the AP. So if you want to find that,
It was the American AP reported that the Justice Department, but I'm reasonably sure that the Amnesty also in a separate report. Anyway, the point is, like, I don't think there can be any denying that there are. Problem. There are issues with, you know, situations. You know, the taser has been shown, I think, unequivocally to be an effective weapon for what it's designed to do in situations where the subject is, you know, healthy, you know, strong, and in most tests where it's done calm. And the point that Amnesty have made is that this is obviously neglecting important situations. I mean, there was a case a couple of weeks ago in Western Australia where a man who was holding petroleum was tasered and was actually burst into flame. According to the police, he had charged at them with petroleum and a lighter, and they had seen fit to use their taser. And I think this is one of the issues that people talk about with the taser. And, you know, police departments, especially police unions, do like it because it is something that is... It increases safety for police officers.
Yeah, and I guess they have less hesitation to use it than they would say a gun.
But is that a good thing?
And therein lies the problem. Yeah. They're often shown as an alternative to firearms, and that's why I would, you know,
they're shown as an alternative to firearms, but aren't used in the same instances
exactly
as firearms would be used.
But this is where I like I said, you know, if you'd asked me 5 or 6 hours ago, I would have told you I was definitely in favour of police having access to tasers, but I'm not quite so sure now. But I'm still, like, the point is always made in these situations, and it was made in this situation in Western Australia last week by the police, that had the alternative been the use of firearms, I mean, this is a situation where at least the police perceive that self-defence was, you know, the act was in self-defence. Had the police needed to use firearms, the situation would have been much more grave, and in the large majority of cases, the situation would have been more grave. And I'm certainly not in favour of of police in the street having firearms. The difficulty, of course, is that it's twofold. I think that tasers, because of the sort of perceived as being less dangerous, are used more often, and that
provoke extreme pain, constitute a form of torture, and in certain cases can also cause death.
And Chris is quoting the UN Committee Against Torture there.
We're in consensus that taser is probably not a good thing?
Yeah, I think so.
This is a turn up for the books. What have we got now?
This is student radio at Adelaide Uni on 101.5.
Back on Left, Right and Centre again, we've brought our mystery contributor back into the studio. He's worked all his nerves out now, and we're ready to welcome him back to deliver his piece once again. Take it away.
I had a thought occur to me the other day, and it surprised me that people haven't taken advantage of it earlier. A lot of people are overweight, and wherever you look on television, there are new diets or products designed to aid with the loss of that weight. Well, why aren't people, fast food places for example, releasing new weight loss meals that are just... Oh, take a look at Hungry Jack's, for example. They could market meals which are exactly half the size of their regular meals and advertise them as having half the calories, half the fat, and etc. And because they're designed for weight loss, they can charge twice as much. And then they can say that because there's half the calories, you can eat twice as much. And they've got four times the money from the same amount of food. And that is my idea.
Guys, are you ready for this?
Yep.
Game show.
Tim likes that theme. This week, we're playing a game called Mind Your P's and Q's. Oh, and yeah. Joel was the little winner last week. Chris, you weren't here.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
I'm going to treat... Yeah?
Cataclysmic
Shut up.
Injustice.
Joel was Chris's kind of surrogate for the week. So I'm going to say that last week's winner was, in fact, Chris.
Oh, what?
Three in a row.
So Chris is
three
the,
in a
Chris
row.
Chris is still the carryover champion, which actually means that you're the most successful contestant on Game Show we ever had.
I was before that, I'd like to point out, with two wins.
True. So I'm going to start this game with you, Chris.
Okay.
Your first question in the game, Mind Your P's and Q's, is what direction should food be passed at the table?
Do you mean is it could be like you're saying forward, backward? Well, obviously not.
As in clockwise around the table or counterclockwise around the table?
Okay, I'm gonna say counterclockwise.
That is correct. 1 point to the Christopher. Tim, your first question is: what is the correct way to butter bread or a roll?
Well, the most important thing to note is that you need to tear it open. You never cut it open with your knife. That's what you want, isn't it? That's the answer you're looking for?
I'll give you half a point for that.
Oh,
if you can elaborate.
What? Butter it with your, you know, knife on your plate? I don't know.
You need to break the bread with your fingers into pieces small enough for one or two bites, butter a pulled apart piece, and then eat it. Do not butter the entire roll or piece of bread at one time.
So he gets the one word question with a one word answer. I get a small essay.
No. That's not the case.
We had complaints last week. I would just like the listeners to know that the people out there,
Tim, Chris, you should actually put your mind on the game of this week and stop focusing on last week.
Chris, your second question is: after the completion of a formal dinner, where do you place your utensils?
Do you want me to talk about serviettes as well?
No, utensils are fine.
Okay. Well, you put them both sort of in the center of the plate next to each other. The fork is on the left, the knife is on the right, and sort of in the middle of the plate. And if you have a serviette, that can go under those two and sit evenly under there as well. Is that sufficient?
Of course it is. Because Chris is Casey's favorite.
Just for that, I'm going to say yes. I was going to ask him to elaborate. The other fact that I wanted was the knife blade was to be inward towards the plate.
Okay.
But I will give you a full point for that little outburst, Tim. Tim, your second question: when a fellow diner asks to please pass the salt, is it standard etiquette to pass both the salt and the pepper?
Yes.
It is etiquette to first pass the salt and then inquire if the other guest would also like the pepper.
So what? You gave me two options, and then it turned out to be not neither one.
No, the answer is no.
The answer is no. You should
reread the question.
When a fellow diner asks to please pass the salt, is it standard etiquette to pass both the salt and the pepper?
So, you would say no. You should pass the salt, and then.
Okay.
You're losing this fair and square. Chris, what is the correct position for a coffee cup in a formal place setting?
I'd say on the left, further, as in, so you've got your plate, right? And it's on the left of your plate, but further, say you've got the edge of the table and it's past your plate. So your plate is in between you and the coffee cup is off to the left of the plate.
The correct answer is the coffee cup and saucer is placed to the right of the place setting, to the right of the furthest utensil. Since most people are right-handed, the handle should face to the right.
Yeah, fair enough.
If you've just tuned in, Chris has answered three questions so far. Tim's had two questions. So far, Chris has got 2 points, and Tim has one half of one point on Mind Your P's and Q's. Tim, true or false? One serving of freshly frozen peas has more vitamin C than one large apple.
False.
That is correct. One serving of freshly frozen peas actually has more vitamin C than two large apples. Sorry, I've made a mistake. No, forget that last part, but it is false.
Okay.
Correct.
Yeah.
Chris, who played Q in James Bond film Die Another Day?
Die Another Day?
Yeah.
I'm going to guess it was... Oh, fuck, I know this. How long do I have to answer?
Until I get bored.
Okay.
That's my standard response.
Can I say, Is the answer Basil Fawlty acceptable?
No. No, it is not. No, it is not. It is not acceptable.
It isn't, if you care to elaborate.
Oh, but I...
Can I get a point for answering his question?
No.
God, how's my... John Cleese.
Damn it.
Correct.
Damn it.
Can't believe that nearly slipped my mind.
Tim, how long is a typical pool queue? And for a bonus point, how much does a typical pool queue weigh?
I will accept
them in imperial or metric measurements.
Would you like it down to microns?
I will judge whether it's close enough. Within reason.
Within reason? Oh, okay. I'm going to say about 1.5 metres, so about 4 feet.
The answer I've got here is exactly 1.5 metres.
Okay.
Would you care to guess the weight?
Do I get another point
bonus
for weight?
Bonus point.
Oh, okay. I'm going to say 600 grams.
I'll give you half a point.
Because it's
just under that.
What is it?
Between 510 and 580.
Well, there you go.
So you are... Okay, so 3 points for Tim, 3 points for Chris. Chris has two, if I've done this correctly. Chris has 2 points, two questions remaining? Yes. No, one question each. So it's a tie with one question each.
Does one of my questions have a bonus question?
Yes, it does.
Okay.
Your question, Chris, is... 756 people in Brussels, Belgium, have broken a Guinness World Record for forming the largest queue for a what? And for a bonus point, what were they raising awareness for?
Was it a donut? And was it for cancer?
Neither of those are correct. It was, in fact, for the largest length of a toilet queue, and it was raising awareness for the need for clean water on World Water Day. Tim, you're playing for the win with this question. True or false, the United Kingdom is the largest producer of peas that are used for freezing in Europe.
I'm going to say false.
It's true.
Boo. Okay, it's a draw.
It's a tie.
It's a draw, and Tim, you had two true or falses, which is... So I think I'm not saying there's anything wrong with that, Casey. All I'm saying is I think the argument that it was rigged is ridiculous.
If anything, you had an easier battle.
And can I also say, can I ask about the scoring system? If there's a tie, is it like the Ashes, where the incumbent retains the title? Because that's what happens in...
Well, the incumbent retains the title because there was no winner, but everyone lost.
Okay. Yep, fair enough.
So, basically no winners in. In wrong sound effect. You're not complaining this week, Tim.
He's complaining with his face.
You have defeated me, Casey. Week after week of this... you've defeated me. I have no complaining left. Week after week of... You know, we have complaints from callers saying that this is unfair, that Timothy's getting a really hard time, and you still don't listen. You still don't listen to the people.
You know how you said you had no complaints left?
You are a tyrant, Casey.
I think we'll find he does. Can I actually just say, we were talking about Sparta before, and I've got a fact that I wish I could have said before, which is that when male Spartans began their military training at age 7, they'd enter this sort of system, and boys lived in communal messes, and they were deliberately underfed to encourage them to master the skill of stealing food. And I just think that's something we should adopt. That's cool.
The show is we're way out of time. Yeah, but before we do go, I want to very, very quickly...
I was briefly going to say, I think it's a good thing Tim has no more complaints because we just don't have time.
Yeah, we don't have time. Very, very quickly, did you know that 1 in 3 women experience physical violence and 1 in 5 experience sexual violence in their lifetime? The SRC at Adelaide Uni are holding an event highlighting this fact. 10,361 women were attending the University of Adelaide in 2008, which means that 3,438 of them faced violence. Head down to the Barsmith Lawns at Adelaide Uni tomorrow, well, in fact, today.
Is it between 1 and 3?
12:30 p.m. onwards, okay. Until about 3 p.m. Yep. Today, Wednesday, August the 5th, head down to the Barsmith Lawns. I've got free pumpkin soup and scrumptious cupcakes for a gold coin donation.
Free music?
Music, yeah. Petition letters, all sorts of things. Organisations, Shine are going to be out, Catherine House, Pregnancy Advisory Centre. All donations from the day will go to Catherine House. Head down there. It's a really important issue to raise awareness against this kind of thing, because I really don't like violence.
No,
women.
I agree.
Or men, in fact.
I agree entirely. I'll be down there. Casey will be down there. Tim might be down there. We'll all see you there. Basically, that's all we've got time for, and probably it's time for us to go, and you'll find we could go out on Tony Blair asking the same question. It's his cover of Should I Stay or Should I Go?
We can't stay, but we will go.
Tim, would you like to go too?
Good night, everybody. I'm going.
See you later next week.